actually like having goals for the new year, but I'm a big believer in bumpy roads and imperfection. That's where the adventure lies. And I think imperfection is beautiful. To me, goals are like learning a new piece of music if you happen to sing or play an instrument. You start out not being able to play the song at all, and you wonder how you will ever do it. Last year, when I started working on this piece that had very unusual rhythms, I thought, maybe this old dog can't learn this. But I was going to practice anyway, so I thought I may as well work on this as anything else. I started by playing it in super slow-mo, over and over, and my partner was very patient. I was surprised to find after a few weeks that it was starting to come naturally. And in a few weeks more, it sounded like I knew what I was doing. All the musicians are laughing. I was quite pleased that this old dog learned a new trick. So just some incremental improvement is all I seek in a day or a week or a month. This year, I decided to work on this one little goal, which is to fully experience and enjoy every moment. Clearly, I'm not going to achieve anywhere close to this goal. But the fact is, I want to be happy, and so it seems to me this is the best goal I can have. And there's something appealing about having an audacious, impossible goal. I figured I would start by setting the bar really low and aim for at least once a day to live in the moment and relish it. Here's how I do it. I just observe what I'm experiencing, either with my senses, that would be sight, sound, touch, smell, or I observe what I'm thinking or feeling. It's actually just like meditation, only you do it throughout the day in any situation, even difficult ones. For example, if I'm driving down East Washington, one day I'll look at the buildings and see what's new or what I haven't noticed before. Another day I'll observe what it feels like to drive. And another day I'll observe what I'm thinking or feeling at that moment. To remind me to do this, every night I report on how I did in my journal. It only takes a minute, so it's not a lot of work. Here are some of the entries from my journal. January 7th, was happy being with my friends. January 8th, enjoyed most of the day. January 9th, not so much, a bit cranky. January 10th, remembered a few times. January 12th, didn't pay attention, tried to remember tomorrow. January 13th, did a little. January 15th, no, kind of forgot. January 16th, no, not really, need to do better. You can see I was on a roll here. January 17th, yes, lots of moments, especially in the morning. So I'd like to invite you to share a minute with me right now to experience the moment. You might guess correctly that my selfish motive for this is so I can write in my journal tonight that I experienced the moment at least once today. If you'd like to join me now, let's take a minute to pause and experience our present moment. As I said before, through your senses or your thoughts or emotions. Here we go. Thanks for participating and letting me experience this moment with you. I hope you find enjoyment in your goals this year, or that you find enjoyment in not having any specific New Year's goals.
Thank you, Barb. I'm experiencing some thirstiness.
Thank you. I really appreciate this idea of taking the space to experience the moment, especially in the example that you use about learning to play a piece of music, right? You're starting with slow-mo and working your way through. That story is about practicing something, right? Which most often, I think, we associate with moving toward a goal, like how learning a new piece of music was your goal. But along the way, if we're paying attention, which is the rest of what you were talking about, or giving us the space to be in the moment, there's this opportunity for learning something in the practicing itself. Like the story of Vashti and her dot. Such a deceptively simple story. Feeling utterly unable to create a piece of art in the way that seems to be expected of her, with a little bit of guidance from a teacher, she learns to see that a tiny thing she does create out of her frustration could be art, as long as she claims it. The teacher helps her start right where she is, with no expectations about what it might lead to, and where it leads is to Vashti being able to pass the lesson along. When we start where we are, we open up the possibility of finding ourselves going places we couldn't possibly have imagined had we set a destination as a goal. Steve Garness Holmes wrote, "You, I am, in me, becoming, and I allowing." You, I am, in me, becoming, and I allowing. Steve is a pastor in the Methodist tradition, and his use of the term I am is in reference to how the God of Moses' heart speaks to Moses of God's nature. The story goes that Moses is off on the mountainside on his own, tending his father-in-law's sheep, and his attention is grabbed by a bush that's on fire but is not being burned by it. And then God calls to him from the bush, and he tells Moses that he is to lead the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt. And Moses questions that he is the right one for this job and what he should say to his people. Here's the scripture from the book of Exodus, chapter 3. "And Moses said unto God, Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent to thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said to Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you." God's response to Moses' first question about his worthiness to serve is that God will be with Moses. So Moses asks God, "Well, who are you anyway?" And God replies, "Eye Asher Eye." Translated into English, this means, "I am that I am." In other words, "Moses, stop asking so many questions and trust me." But translated into Hebrew, the meaning is a little more nuanced. It can be read as, "I am who I am becoming." Or perhaps, "Hey, Moses, be still and know that there is more here that you can possibly understand, and trust in the process." God is telling Moses that God simply is, and what is changes and becomes. And so it is with us humans as well. We are constantly becoming, learning and practicing what it is to be human and in community with each other. So Steve Garness Holmes' poem is a metaphor for allowing the holy to arise within us And that can only happen when we are still. Invitation, well, maybe not only, but often, when we are still. Invitational to that experience, or one might say, experiencing the moment. So when we're trying too hard to move along some path towards some goal, trying too hard to focus something creative to arise on a blank page, we're less able to make the space for that to happen. Moses had to stop what he was doing, stop chasing the sheep around the mountainside, and interact with his God in that bush to make space for the reality of his role in leading the Israelites to freedom. Moses also had to let go of his self-doubt and learned to trust in the process, to believe that it was possible for him to be that leader. In her book, Start Where You Are, A Guide to Compassionate Living, the American Buddhist nun Pema Chodron wrote, "Meditation practice is not about later when you get it all together and you're this person you really respect. You may be the most violent person in the world. That's a fine place to start. That's a very rich place to start. Juicy, smelly. You might be the most depressed person in the world, the most addicted person in the world, the most jealous person in the world. You might think that there are no others on the planet who hate themselves as much as you do. All of that is a good place to start, just where you are." So becoming ourselves begins with knowing ourselves, starting where we are, experiencing the moment, regardless of what that moment is in and of itself a practice. And what do we learn when we're practicing being in the moment? We learn, again, in Pema Chodron's words, how to stay. We learn to sit with the uncomfortable feelings that come up when we allow ourselves to explore our true natures, or the nature of our neighbors, or the world of which we are a part. We learn to let ourselves feel the disappointment of not getting that job, or the sadness of loss, or the anger of injustice, instead of immediately turning to what makes us feel better, or moving on to the next thing. We learn to stay open-hearted in the face of that pain, or sadness, or anger, because it is the heart that is open that can absorb healing. And we learn to stay with those feelings long enough to absorb them, because this gives us access to compassion for the suffering of others. Pema Chodron teaches how to learn to stay. She says that one of the unfortunate side effects of what we consider negative feelings is that they bring up for us stuff we can't let go of, stuff that hooks us into a downward spiral of feeling bad. Think, if you will, for example, of the last time someone was angry with you. And notice. Notice how your mind maybe wants to shy away from how awful that felt. And if you can make yourself stay in that feeling for a moment, notice what happens. Does your mind want you to relive that conversation over and over again? Does it come up with better responses than the ones you could make in the moment? Does it fantasize about how the conversation could have gone if you were more able to think of those better responses in the moment? Notice how you feel about that person's anger. Do you believe that you didn't deserve it? Or maybe that you did? Or maybe both that you did and you didn't all at the same time? and notice your own response to that anger. And how easily that response stays with you. And in that noticing, I invite you to take a deep breath. And another. And if you can, allow yourself the grace to remember that you did the best you could in the moment. That whatever its outcome, you are a human being worthy of love and compassion. And try, if you can, to stop judging your response, but instead congratulate yourself for noticing it and what your mind is doing with it. As I learn to stay with the uncomfortable feelings, they begin to lose their hold over me. This takes a lot of practice. In Pema Chodron's words, I find myself getting less hooked by them, and I become more able to turn the I shoulds into I'd like to's. This sounds like a really small difference, maybe even semantics, but let me explain. The should comes with baggage, with guilt, with resentment. And so what I'm learning to do is to absorb that resentment and try to turn it to simple regret. It would have been nice to do it this way, and maybe next time, if I'm able to stay and breathe, I might do it differently than I did last time. But to do that, I have to have experienced that moment. I have to have noticed and appreciated my ability to notice as I move through those moments. Until instead of beating myself up for something that makes me feel bad, I start to learn to appreciate noticing that it makes me feel bad. This helps me get out of that downward spiral when something makes me uncomfortable. This isn't just a personal exercise, though, as useful as it is as a personal exercise, because we start where we are together in our work toward truth-telling and holding each other and making justice. Those of us who were here last week sat in some discomfort as we heard the words of Black people in our faith tradition giving voice to the hurts they have felt in all of our own congregations and gatherings. To start where we are in the instance of anti-racism and anti-oppression work is to hear the stories of people of color in our movement. Black people, like we heard from last week, and other people of color among us, because they are here as well, and some of their experiences are very similar to those of Black people, and some are even harder to hear because they're not being emphasized the way those of Black people are. Because where we are is in recovery from their wounds, and their wounds are our wounds, all of us, right? Because our becoming happens together in community. Because it's only in relationship with each other that we can practice who we are and who we want to be. Just like Moses needed God to be with him in order to become the leader God knew he could be, And just like Moses needed his brother Aaron, who shows up a little later in the story, to help him. So last week, we were asked to sit with those stories regardless of our own racial identity. What would happen if we learned to simply feel the discomfort they produced in us? To stay with that discomfort and to let it guide how we become. How would it change our hearts to let them stay open to the hurt that some of our fellow Unitarian Universalists have experienced? This is like making a dot on a blank piece of paper. I don't know the answer, but I think that it would break us open. I think that it would break our faith open into a sea change that would make our good news accessible to so many more. When we start where we are, we find ourselves going places we couldn't have anticipated. We can remember that we are already holy vessels, as Steve Garnes Holmes wrote, and we can rest in the presence that we hold. So let us start with those simple marks on our papers, and let us remind each other to sign them. I bet we can inspire others to do the same. May it be so. And may we be so.